worker friend. I read yesterday's news. I folded up page 21 and stuck it in my shoes.
I gave me a nickel. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 29th of December. Very nice to have you with us on this day. We are hearing the music of Tony Rice, a bluegrass innovator who passed away at the age of 69 over the weekend, and he will be playing his music throughout the morning this morning. You can see our playlist posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. Let me introduce the group to you, and we'll get started as we do last Tuesday of the year, and away we go. WAMC's Alan Shartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. To you, I am fine. We had quite a bit of snow this morning, but it's all clearing up already. I mean, it really is coming down.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
I think that was in the forecast, and I don't maybe a little bit more, but, you know, it is that time of year, right?
Yeah.
Did you get your walk in prior to the snow?
No, unfortunately, I could have done that. Now I have to wait till they clear some of this away, but I will. I never miss, ever.
Yeah.
I get a green line every day from my app that says I've walked at least 10,000 steps or close to 5 miles.
When a walk becomes a trudge.
No, in a war, you know, I mean, it's part of the deal.
Yeah.
It's just part of the deal.
We also welcome former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain to the proceedings. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Happy New Year almost.
Yes. Happy New Year to you and happy holidays. And very good to hear your voice on this Tuesday morning. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo also with us this morning. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. Good morning, J.P.
Hey, Joe.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, thanks for asking. I appreciate it.
Hey, Joe.
We're doing well. It is a reminder for all of you that if you would like to join in on the conversation, that's very easy to do. All you have to do is write to us. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A lot of different places we could start this morning, and certainly the stimulus check brouhaha is one of them. So it's that or the obstruction over the transition. Is there any? Do we have a vote from our panelists? Okay, so let's talk about stimulus. We go to.
No.
I thought you would all just jump in and say the same thing at one time, and it would be an easy decision for me. House votes to boost stimulus checks to $2,000 with bipartisan support. Now it goes to Mitch McConnell, where Senate action is uncertain. Lawmakers voted to meet a Trump demand that nearly upended the massive spending and stimulus bill. On Sunday, Trump signed into law a $900 billion emergency relief package that includes $600 checks. His advisors had advocated for those payments, but Trump later called the check size measly and demanded it be increased. After he signed the law, he pledged to continue pushing for the larger payments, something many Democrats also support. 44 Republicans joined the vast majority of Democrats on Monday in approving the bill, 275 to 134. Narrowly clearing a two-thirds threshold it needed to pass, the measure's fate is much less certain in the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans. So, the big question on Capitol Hill this morning is, what will Mitch McConnell do? Alan Shartok.
Well, as a political scientist, I tell you, this is Christmas for me. It can't get any better than this. Because here's this president who gets mad at everybody. And he got mad at the Republicans for not being aggressive enough in their defense of him. So now he wants to, well, screw them, and that is exactly what he's trying to do. Now you got a president who is immensely popular with his base, with the rank and file Republicans. He says, give him the $2,000. Mitch is Scrooge, appropriately close to Christmas time, and says, no, we don't want to give that kind of money out. Here and now, they're all of a sudden they're becoming fiscal conservatives after all of these years. And so, what do you do if you're a Republican? Do you turn around and say, "Okay, this is it for me"? I'm going to defy the president of the United States, who is beloved by his base, or am I going to go along with him and give them and give the Democrats a great victory with for $2,000 and give Trump a victory because he's just angry at the Republicans?
And you have Georgia, right?
Right, and that's a big issue. All right, Joe, you're so right, because. If, in fact, they say, okay, $600, that may motivate, as opposed to $2,000, that may motivate people to get out and vote and on the Democratic side. I still think it's an uphill trudge for the Democrats, but you never know.
J.P. Miller.
What I am excited about is that Bernie Sanders has a curveball up his sleeve, and that, so what he's doing is he's threatening to filibuster the defense bill to keep senators in Washington, D.C. for New Year's Eve. Bernie is not the guy you want to hang out on New Year's Eve. You can hang out with him every other day, but not New Year's Eve. And so, you know, he's holding up the Senate to try to get them to pass the $2,000 stimulus bill. And I agree with Alan, you know, Mitch McConnell is between a rock and a hard place. Either whatever decision he makes, it's going to hurt him. And so when you have a decision like that, it's tough for McConnell, and it'll be interesting to see what he ends up doing.
So, JP, how does Mitch lose by giving in to the $2,000?
Well, you could make the case that the Republican Party base, there are some people that are fiscal conservatives, not the elected officials, but voters, who might say, why are we spending all this money? So I think that it could hurt him that way in terms of the Georgia race.
Yeah.
So, Rosemary Armeo.
Well, I'm struck by how stupid Americans are again about how their government works, and that Trump and Republicans have gotten away with saying, look, these Democrats want to spend money on foreign aid, and that's why our checks are only $600, not $1,200, as if even $1,200 is going to help people who are thousands of dollars in debt with rent and money now because of the ongoing economic crisis. But at any rate, what the Congress did was really meld together two measures to kind of save time. And there are budget measures in there that come from Trump's own budget request for military aid for Egypt, for example. And he was successfully able to tell people, look, this money is being misspent when it really comes out of two different pots, completely unrelated, and people fall for it, like, oh, Trump is standing up for us. So Alan's right, this is an appeal to his base, and it's just stupid that they would fall for it. I love Bernie Sanders' maneuver, his little sneaky maneuver, because not overriding the veto on the military bill, not giving pay, much less a pay raise to our troops, would be immensely unpopular, especially in a state like Georgia. However, even if McConnell, all that Bernie can do is force McConnell to bring the bill up for a vote, I'm not at all sure it would pass, because he couldn't get, since May, McConnell has been unable to get a bill with more money for people past his caucus. What would change now that he could do it? So it all seems extremely futile and crazy to me. We'll see what happens.
Let's go to Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think what the president did by raising all this issue is he's made it very, very confusing and uncomfortable for all the members of Congress who are Republicans. You know, you said something like 40, 45 Republicans in the House of Representatives voted along with the Democrats to raise the stimulus check to $2,000, including somebody like Elise Stefanik. She voted for it. So she went against the Trump people, you know, who I'm sorry, she went against, you know, her party to support Trump, I guess, and somehow blame Nancy Pelosi in her comment when she did do it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of senators like that who want to please their constituents. They want to raise the money because raise the check size, because that's a very popular thing to do and it will make them very popular. And yet it means going against McConnell, which could draw his ire, which could have future ramifications. And it is exactly as Alan said. I mean, for somebody who likes to watch this kind of theater, this is just extraordinary. And the other thing is that if everybody got a $2,000 check, it would cost the U.S. government $464 billion. And that is a true test of whether, as Rosemary says, McConnell's caucus will go along. But all they need is a few, right? A few Republicans to break. And this could be what the check is.
So if you are Alan Chartok, if you are Joe Biden and you're on the sidelines watching this, the semi-sidelines, minus an obstruction or two, and you're looking at what is happening, who are you rooting for in this scenario?
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, as the Brits would say, isn't it? We have to get inside, very hard to do, Trump's mind here and say, what in the world is he talking about, you know, all of this extra money for? Well, he's on his way out. He wants to grab the headlines every day, and he gets away with it. We have Joe Biden coming up now and criticizing, in a very untypical way, criticizing the president for not cooperating with the transition, trying to grab some headlines back, which he did, by the way. I think the idea that Trump, of course, doesn't give a damn about anything. He doesn't give a damn about the billions and billions that you'd have to give out, which, you know, those of us who lean Democratic, let's put it that way, are all for the $2,000. So I'm fascinated, and I want to see whether or not these spineless creatures in the Republican Party in the Senate have the cojones to go along and say, okay, I'd rather give them the money than invoke Trump's ire, because Trump has already said anybody who messes with me, I'm going to run a primary against.
And Rosemary, if you are Joe Biden, but you also want to get your own thing through eventually too, right?
What do you mean his own thing?
Well, I mean he'll want to do money at some point. Another stimulus, yes?
Sure. Yeah, this isn't going to be the last stimulus bill. And, of course, everything could change if the Georgia races go his way. A long shot, although, you know, it's getting closer and closer. It is a long shot. If he gets those two extra votes, he can push through a bigger package later. So Biden, if McConnell is in a terrible spot, Biden is in a good spot. He can blame, if this goes badly, he can blame it on Trump. If it goes well, he still has a shot to change things in January, after January. So I think he's in a good spot.
JP?
It was interesting to hear Governor Cuomo talk about the stimulus yesterday. He was really lambasting the stimulus. He was basically saying, you know, it's a morsel when we really need, you know, trucks and trucks and trucks full of food. We're being given a morsel by the stimulus bill. So, even with the 2,000, he will still not be happy because he wants the state and local funding. So yes, we will likely have another stimulus bill once Biden gets into office.
Rosemary?
Right. You know, I just was going to agree with JP and did not mean to interrupt that. That's what I meant by saying, you know, $1,200 is not going to make a difference. It's, there's an argument to be made that this whole relief package is structured crazily. It's giving money to people who don't really need it. In fact, some people who don't need it at all, who are banking it, savings of the wealthy people in this country are increasing because they're just socking it away. Whereas the money going to people who truly are without food and can't pay their rent, they're not getting enough to really make a true difference. And then money is going into businesses, big businesses, again, that don't really need it, whereas small businesses and restaurants are just dying. So there's problems with this relief bill that go way beyond what Donald Trump thinks about it.
It's so true, Mike, and it seems like, you know, you hope you learn the lessons of the first time around of when we heard of some of the major issues of who got money and who didn't, but we seem to be repeating that in many ways.
Right. It seems exactly that way. Some big companies are going to use it to retire debt, basically make it a low interest loan, and some small operations are just not going to benefit from it. And you're right, Rosemary. I mean, people aren't going to go out and spend this $2,000 in a local restaurant or on a vacation and pour money back into the economy. Some people will spend it immediately for rent and food and to pay their utility bills. Other people might use it to buy a new iPhone, or they might use it to, put in their checking account and just hold on to it till they can see how they use it. Or, it is not equitable. I don't know how you get around that. I don't know how
I can only say, Mike, that there's some good people out there who are saying to us, it's true. Some of this money wasn't needed. We're going to put it where we want, either the American Cancer Society or to WAMC. And we are hearing from a lot of those folks right now who are saying, if this is good, we'll use this money the way we think it should be used appropriately in this society.
Yeah, no, and that's admirable.
Those are very good people, and that's great. But the truth is, I'm one of the people who I can get along without it. If I get the money, it's going to go to pay off some credit card debt. And that's all very nice for me. I admit it. It does not make me love Donald Trump, might I add. However, my neighbors don't have food for their kids, and they couldn't have a
terrible
Christmas. They should have gotten my money.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. If there's a way to do that, and I don't know how to do that. That's the complication. And they didn't want to deal with that, or they couldn't deal with that, and how to, make a lower income threshold or something.
We do have to take a break.
Okay, but in order to get the Republicans to go along with it, they had to give it to their friends, too. That's the issue.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, the last Tuesday of the year, as I mentioned. And we have a bunch of letters, so let me get to them about the stimulus. Corinne says, how is it a victory for either Democrats or Republicans? Isn't it a victory for the people suffering or not? ? Sort of what we were just talking about, right?
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a lovely view, that we should be thinking only of the ultimate beneficiaries, who are the people. But the truth is that this is a great political contest as well. And there is interest in that.
I want to subscribe to what Rosemary just said. That's exactly right. There aren't people who should get this money or not. It's what this is all about in terms of a contest between these organized parties.
Right.
Let's see. We go on another stimulus question or comment. Why can't Congress send $600 to Americans who are starving and losing their homes now and then work out whether to up the total to $2,000 with a second check of $1,400? That from Mary.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. Don't get logical on us, Mary.
Well, it would also be a great expense. Sending out that many checks is not done without lots of manpower and how do they do it, postage or use of, I guess they did direct deposits towards the end of the last giveaway. So from an efficiency point of view, to do it once is much better.
Well, also, who trusts them? We're going to send the check. The next
later.
Check is in the mail, and we've heard that one.
Right.
Before.
I agree with you, Alan. The pressure is on now, and I think everybody who really wants to see this happen is seizing the moment and very cleverly. Putting it on Mitch McConnell, and there's not a lot of tears being shed across the country on the uncomfortable position that Mitch McConnell is in.
You can say that again.
Let's see. Susan writes, Bernie's joined by Ed Markey as well. I love their pluck. 3 weeks ago, the Problem Solvers Caucus, who initiated this latest bill, essentially began in May with the HEROES Act, oppose the idea of a stimulus check altogether, the one time Bernie and Hawley had proposed. 1 week later, it was a given. So who knows? I hope for the best, says Susan.
Well, you know, the Markey thing is kind of interesting. Now, I may be wrong about this, and believe me, you know, I hadn't followed it closely enough. But I always saw Markey as a sort of middle of the roader. And then he gets Joe Kennedy running against him as a great liberal in the primary. Kennedy loses, of course. And all of a sudden, we see a sort of reborn Markey taking a much more liberal stance, it's all right with me, in his politics. So it's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. Let's go to Bob. I don't mean to be a Grinch, but it's absurd to give $2,000 to millions of people who haven't lost any income during the pandemic. For instance, federal employees. Give even more to the Americans who have been impoverished by the pandemic, but I don't need it, and like millions of others, shouldn't get it.
What's the answer, Rosemary?
I really do not believe that there's not a way that we could do a needs-based assessment and give out the money that way.
If the Republicans wanted it, right? I mean, the problem is that these negotiations always are my team, your team, my people, your people, and the Republicans had to get their pound of flesh if they were going to, if the writer is, of course, correct, but if this thing was going to happen and the Republicans controlled the Senate, this is the way it was going to be.
You know, what about taking the money that would go to the stimulus checks and creating a fund that would fund food, you know, food pantries and food distribution and subsidies for rent when people can't afford their rent, they have to pass tests. That creates a giant bureaucracy, and it's very difficult to do on the fly. But in theory, that would be much better spent than just giving everybody a couple of $1,000s, because some people just won't need it. Yeah.
Again, Mike, in Democratic
Cuomo is not incorrect. Giving the money to the states. And you can clearly see who was plainly hit, who was most hard hit by economic trouble from the virus that way. That would be more efficient than giving it out to tens of millions of people who don't really need it.
It wouldn't be popular, though.
So here we are, a group of people who are basically, I think, correct and somewhat to the left of the American people, and we're saying this is the way that it ought to happen. And we know very well why it's not happening, because Mitch McConnell and his people just won't let that happen, and the president won't. Of course, getting inside the president's head is anybody's difficulty.
A dark and stormy place. JP?
Yeah, I think it's essential that the right people get the money, as you all have been talking about, and it doesn't seem like this bill is going to do that.
Let's go to Russell's letter. I'm amazed at how freely Rosemary tosses the word stupid around, claiming people must be stupid. It must be a terrible burden to be as intelligent as herself. Now, Rosemary, I have to say something. I probably wouldn't read that letter to too many other panelists, and yet I feel okay reading it to you, and I don't know if you find that to be a compliment or not.
I do.
I do. I was hoping that was the case.
By not calling stupidity stupid, what do we gain? Please tell me that. The last 4 years have not shown me anything that to be gained by not calling stupid out when I see it.
That's why so many people write us and say, you know, the thing I love about Rosemary the most is that she tells it like it is.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Michael writes, all those Trump voters who voted for him for fear of socialism, $2,000 from the government? Socialism! Bernie and Trump on the same side? What do they think now? That
Touché.
From Michael. Deborah says, isn't the stimulus and the previous stimulus checks deducted from the tax refund? That's a good question. I don't know that. Does anyone know that?
Oh, it's not going to be deducted from your tax refund. That's just on top of that.
No.
So if you're eligible for a tax refund, you'll still get it.
All right.
It's done by two separate agencies. IRS has nothing to do with the refunds.
I thought there might be some sarcasm in that letter, but maybe not.
Well, maybe. I don't. It's hard to read sarcasm.
Yeah, it is.
Moving on to another, sort of another issue, and I think a very interesting one that should take us to our next break. Daisy writes, Chuck Schumer is not helping the uphill trudge in Georgia. Schumer has been caught in a memo saying that he isn't hopeful about the Senate race and isn't encouraging donors to contribute. Schumer is so disappointing in so many ways. Time for him to go, panel, question mark?
Yep.
I called out Schumer a while back in commentary and said, you know, if you're the leader of the Democratic Party, you got to be the leader and you got to really be aggressive about it. The other side to that, of course, was that he was worried about McConnell. He was worried about deals that he was having to make and all the rest of it. The Schumer people got in touch with me. They were angry at me for having said it, obviously. I've detected some more aggressiveness on Schumer's part in what he's doing. So maybe.
All right. Anybody else?
I think the big test for Schumer is if the Democrats can win these two Georgia races, he's going to look like a king. I think that's what he's focused on. And if he can pull those off, he'll be in great shape.
The letter writer is correct in saying Schumer has been quoted as saying he's not really thinking that this is going to happen. How does he get credit for making it happen?
Oh, I don't think he gets credit.
It was one story, and the spokesperson denied it.
It may even have been a good move because, as I've said, too much interest in this race by outsiders is not going to help the Democratic cause. So he may even be right in that. But there are other reasons. This is 4 years. This isn't just what he's doing in Georgia. It's not even the stimulus package. He has not been the aggressive, in-your-face, Pelosi-type leader that is needed against Mitch McConnell. I personally am waiting for AOC to run against him, and I think he ought to be one of those people worried about a primary challenge.
Mm. Well, America's has a moderate political group on both the Democratic and Republican sides. We saw that with the Joe Biden victory. And while I'm for everything virtually that AOC is for, there's got to be tactics in order to win elections. If we just saw a poll, we had AOC way down in the American populace, Rosemary, and that you may be right. Maybe he deserves a primary. Maybe he deserves a primary. Yeah. Schumer does. Yes. Go ahead, please.
But, Alan, while that's correct, Schumer is not facing a national audience. He's facing a New York audience, and that's a different whole ball game.
Yeah, but he's got to – please, go ahead, JP.
I think that AOC, while a much better politician than Cynthia Nixon, has to look at Cynthia Nixon's primary against Andrew Cuomo, where she lost 60-40, as what looks to me like a tough uphill battle for AOC to take on Schumer and win. And she can't primary him without giving up her seat in Congress. So it's the up or out move. You know, if she tries to primary Schumer and she loses, she could potentially lose her seat in Congress.
And remember how she got that seat in Congress. She has a particular district, a subset of the New York population. It's doubtful that she could have won in an awful lot. Now, maybe now she could, but then I think that the district was really perfect for her to take on an entrenched Democrat.
I got to try to keep my dream alive here. She has not gotten where she is without being willing to take risk. And if you remember, just not too long ago, she was talking about, well, maybe I won't even stay in Congress. So would it really be so bad and out of character for her to risk an actual congressional seat for a possible Senate seat? I don't think so.
You know, it's an interesting point because being in the United States Congress ain't no bowl of milk, that's for sure. It's a hard job, and a lot of people go and they want to get out of it. A lot of them run for Senate. That's the next thing up, obviously, except in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
where Well, you got two senators and one congressman. Okay, so you know, I think you're right, Rosemary, that she's a risk taker. But as a political observer in this case, I think it would be a rough run for her. You can write this one down too, Rosemary.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, President-elect Joe Biden on Monday accused President Trump and his political appointees of obstructing the transition of power to his incoming administration, particularly in the national security sphere. An escalation in tone after reports of isolated difficulties in the transition process last week. Biden specifically called out the Office of Management and Budget and the Defense Department as agencies where his transition team had encountered, quote-unquote, roadblocks from political leadership. Right now, we just aren't getting all the information that we need from the outgoing administration in key national security areas. It's nothing short, in my view, of irresponsibility, Biden said, of the resistance his team was facing. He warned that such delays could allow enemies of the United States to take advantage of vulnerabilities, citing a recent massive cybersecurity breach that compromised several U.S. agencies. Biden said, as our nation is in a period of transition, we need to make sure that nothing is lost in the handoff between administrations. My team needs a clear picture of our force posture around the world and our operations to deter our enemies. Biden made the remarks in Wilmington, Delaware, saying that we need full visibility into the budget planning underway at the Defense Department and other agencies in order to avoid any window of confusion or catch-up that our adversaries may try to exploit. The pointed accusation by a president-elect that the incumbent was putting national security at risk by refusing to cooperate underscored the unprecedented and divisive nature of the current transition. That from the Washington Post. Alan.
Good job, Joe. I mean, he had to do it, obviously. There are a number of issues here. I think I mentioned it before.
I need you on mic, Alan.
Oh, you are so right. I was talking into my cell phone. That doesn't work.
Nope. There you go. Much better.
Thank you, Joe. What happened here is that, it was getting to be all Trump again. So on one level, it was important that Biden got out there and called Trump out for his nonsense. But because he needed to take the microphone, as in my case, back again. I think he did that, but also because it is the height of irresponsibility on Trump's part. He doesn't give a damn. After all, this is a friend of Putin. This is a friend of Duterte. This is a friend of the great dictators around the world. The dictators. I don't mean great to mean great. So Biden and his advisors did the right thing. That's what I'm thinking.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, he took the microphone back. I think that's exactly what Biden needs to do. And on January 20th, he needs to keep that microphone. And it will be very interesting once Trump is out of the White House, whether he's able to focus attention on himself like he loves to do. I mean, I think that wanting to focus attention on his own self was why he threatened to veto the stimulus bill. And will the former president's rants after January 20th really be newsworthy? And I don't think so. And I'm looking forward to not hearing anything about Trump anymore. And, you know, he's basically checked out. He's playing golf. I wonder if he'll even go back to Washington. He doesn't have to, does he?
No. But I'm a little bit worried, Mike, about Trump and his plans. I don't think this is a guy who's going quietly. And I'm really quite concerned about the Trump move, the Pence move, and what that indicates. There's no bottom with these people, I'll be celebrating the day that the inauguration occurs. Rosemary, what do you think?
Yeah, I have a bottle of Prosecco set aside for January 20th, and I hope that it will be called for. I think what's also lost in here is not just taking Trump out of the news, but holding him accountable? What really is at stake? And I suspect why you're getting pushback from his team about transition is the security breach that seems to have fallen out of the news this weekend. One of the biggest security breaches ever, involving agencies intimately involved in national security. Trump downplayed it and then ignored it. And the press has gone along with that. Maybe that's what he doesn't want information to get out about. I think Trump's behavior as a stooge or an agent or whatever the heck he was for the Russians needs to be fully explored and examined by, if not more, by the Biden administration.
So boy, are you right about that.
Speaking out is, I hope his speaking out about it is a sign that he is aware of this.
You are so right about that. I still think, I've been saying it from day one, Russians. What is going on there? And is it a perfidy of one kind or another? You are so right.
JP?
I thought it was interesting that the Washington Post story you sent around, Joe, that Biden said that some agencies are having exemplary cooperation. I wonder what those agencies are and why they're only cooperating with some agencies and seems to be blocking OMB and defense. It seems like there's got to be more to the story there as to why it's those two specific agencies and having, you know, for Biden to say exemplary cooperation, I'd say that's quite a compliment, right?
What do you think? What do you think the reason for that is? I think it's that the orange menace is not raging at his desk, hearing something on the news and saying, cut it out to those specific agencies, and the other ones are getting away with it, at least in the short run. That's what I think.
Yeah, but don't you think putting Christopher Miller, who's like a conspiracy theory guy, as head of the Defense Department, he's the acting defense secretary, that was absolutely intended to put a roadblock, I mean, put a landmine in front of Biden's transition. These are intended to make Biden fail in his early months and embarrass Biden and he's setting it up that way. And I don't think there's any other explanation.
The grand finale, if you will. Rosemary?
Yeah.
Well, I again think it's connected to the security leak. I think he wants to keep budget and military are the most sensitive out there. As for who's cooperating, I would be willing to bet State is one of them, not because Pompeo was there, but because everybody under Pompeo so hates what has happened to the State Department under Trump that he's and they have hopes that Joe, who loves diplomacy, would build it up again. I bet that's an agency that's cooperating with him. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with the way they've been treated. EPA, that's another one. I bet they're cooperating like crazy with Biden as well. So. And health as well because of the epidemic and Biden's. So it's his intentions as announced would make a difference, and also exactly what Trump is trying to hide, and that's got to be military.
Let's. We only have a few minutes before we go to the break at the top of the hour. I do want to touch on the House military bill override, which Republicans joined Democrats to hand President Trump a rare legislative rebuke in the final days of his presidency. The bill will next be taken up by the Senate, where it is expected to pass. The House voted on Monday to override the veto of the annual military policy bill, mustering bipartisan support to enact the legislation over the president's objections. It was a 322-87 vote, and the first time a chamber of Congress has agreed to override one of Mr. Trump's vetoes, underscoring the sweeping popularity of the military legislation, which authorizes a pay raise for the nation's troops. That also amounted to a remarkable reprimand over the president's decision to flout one of his party's key orthodoxies, projecting military strength from Republicans who have been reluctant to challenge Mr. Trump during his 4 years in office. So how does this play out, Alan?
Good old Ike. He had it exactly right. You know, he warned about this cabal of pro-defense people in the United States who are going to and don't build the whole country around it. And in fact, that's exactly what has happened. And now you see, when it all comes down to it, this is what it is. They're not gonna back off on defense. It's the one thing you can't fool around with, and I don't mean fool. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to put some interesting pressure on the two Republican senators in Georgia, Loeffler and Perdue, because they're going to have to go against Trump, and yet it's the state of Georgia where there's so many military people. And it's just one more. I know we're going to talk about Georgia maybe a little later in the program, but I mean, it's just one more example about the schizophrenia that's going on in the Republican Party. The things that they support, they're also voting against. And this, of course, was one that our own North Country Congresswoman, Elise Stefanik, voted for the override because of Fort Drum. You know, I mean, it's caused, in a way, Trump has caused some bipartisanship. It's weird.
Some unintentional bipartisanship?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure, Joe. I mean, I think he really wanted to stick it to the Republicans, who he feels are not being appropriately supportive of his attempt to negate the election. And that's why we're seeing a lot of the stuff we're seeing right now.
JP.
I thought it was interesting, you know, the people that voted for the override in New York, Katko, Peter King, and Elise Stefanik, and the people that stuck with Trump were Chris Jacobs, Tom Reed, and Lee Zeldin. I did a little homework on the internet this morning, and it's hard to, I guess Mike's right on Elise has to do it for Fort Drum. But it is interesting to see bipartisanship at the tail end of the Trump presidency in a rebuke of the president.
Does that mean he's going to lose power now? That, you know, a lot of people think he's going to be out. He'll be, you know, a presidency, and, you know, an external presidency. But maybe this indicates that people will only go so far with him. And I think the defense bill is the one thing that you really have to look at here.
Anyone?
It's a big deal. I think he'll continue to be powerful. Obviously not as powerful, though, as a sitting president. I do think that he, more than anyone else, let's assume for a minute he doesn't run for president in 2024. I think that he will have the most powerful and valuable endorsement for people that are potentially running in 2024.
But let's say he goes to jail. See, I'm convinced.
Endorsement.
I'm convinced that the reason he's so crazy about leaving office is that he knows what he faces when he gets out.
All right.
I don't believe he thinks that way. He thinks he'll get out of it as he has everything in his life. I think he's really centered right now on getting even and evening scores and awarding the good things. I want to bring up stupidity again, because actually Trump has a point in vetoing this bill. He's not against helping the military. We know that. So what he's against is Congress failed to slap down the tech companies, which he's angry at for a number of things, mostly because they're censoring his lying tweets and posts. But there is protection for the tech agencies that ought to be looked at. And his veto should have set that off. It didn't, of course. We're just all ignoring it. We're talking about whether he has the power to compel Republicans still. We're talking about pro or con the military. These are all the wrong issues. It just goes to what I'm saying about the scarcity of our political discourse.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more items to discuss, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel. And with us this morning, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. I have a few letters today and would like to get to them. Jim writes, I wonder why the $2,000 could not be channeled through the unemployment programs, giving the money to people who are out of work.
There you go.
We've already explained that. It's called the Republicans in the Senate.
We go to Joseph, who says, how did the military vote towards Trump? Is he mad at the military for not voting for him? Do you have that stat? Anyone on that?
Was there any data on that, whether service members voted for Trump or voted for Biden? I thought it was more Trump, but that just may be.
That's
assumption.
Always been the assumption.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have David's letter who says, I've always felt like AOC is a grandstander, a great amount of bluster and no result. Her plan to have her cable TV show and those like her extremist views will follow her on cable TV while she makes her millions. Just watch it happen, .. says David.
Bluster. Phineas T.
Aforementioned. We go to Susan. As a regular panel listener, I continue to marvel at the strategic IQ of Rosemary Armeo. There you go, Rosemary.
That ain't stupid.
Strategic IQ. Also suggesting you should run for office.
Very nice.
I would assume you would hate that. The running for office part. Yeah.
To raising money, I would not be good at that. You have to be nice to people and all that flattery. No, I would have trouble with it.
Isn't part of Trump's temper tantrum, asks Doreen, the fact that the defense bill would rename military bases that honor Confederate generals? If Trump allowed that to happen, it would anger his base, not to mention the Proud Boys.
Good
point.
That's
true. Yeah, I think that's exactly right on. And, yep.
All right, we move on to... go ahead.
You forget, though, that to humor his base, he does not have to succeed. He just has to show that he's fighting for them.
That's right. And that's exactly right.
I think a lot of his actions have to do with that. He does not have to win this, that maybe that had a lot to do with his backing down on the COVID vote, while Lindsey Graham, who spent a whole weekend golfing with him to try to get him to change his mind, why he succeeded. He didn't have to cause chaos in the government. He made his point. Hey, I was fighting for people to get more money.
Let's move on to one more letter here. We go to Nancy. The reason for structuring the stimulus as a universal program is that they receive more popular support than means-tested programs and can be more efficiently and swiftly implemented. Higher earners will have to pay taxes on the money. Anyone who doesn't feel they should be getting the money can always donate it to something like a food bank.
All right.
Let's see.
Or a public radio station, whatever, you know.
Exactly. Before the end of the year. Like how you think, Mike. You're good.
God bless you, Mike.
We go to this story, and Mike teased it a moment ago, but let us talk about Georgia and the runoffs and what's happening there. A test of whether Trump remains a poison for moderate GOP voters. The question is what kind of race in will this be? For most of the past 7 weeks, the cameras and conversations in Georgia's unusual dual Senate runoffs, which will determine which party controls the Senate, have focused on polarized voters at the margins. Some in the GOP have fixated on whether Trump's diehard supporters will turn out amid his extraordinary efforts to subvert the presidential election results, including his false claims that rigged voting machines led to his defeat here. Democrats hope that Stacey Abrams' heralded ability to turn out the Democratic base of blacks, Hispanics, and white liberals can be replicated on behalf of would-be Senators John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. Just as significant, though less talked about, is a third category of voters. Tens of thousands of moderate Republicans who, like centrist suburbanites across the country, rejected Trump or stayed home in November. That group is now seen by both parties as a critical bloc in future elections, including in what is expected to be a razor-thin finish in Georgia's Senate contests. So, what do you think? What does that mean?
Rosemary, you're the great prognosticator. I mean that. What do you think?
On Georgia. I maintain all along that this is a really, really uphill battle for Democrats because
I'm
such,
with you.
I know it looks like it'll be close And that's good considering the quality of the incumbents is so abysmal. They are terrible people. And I am enjoying immensely this whole deal now where they're, what's her name, Loeffler is saying, oh, I vote 100% with Trump. Well, does that mean she's going to vote against overriding this veto? Or will she vote for it? That, and either way, she's just a hypocrite. She worked against the self-interest of her own constituents. Terrible people. Will that be considered, or will it be race? Race is part of it. And then this threat of socialism. There's a lot of writing going on right now about whether the scare tactics, saying, oh, put in the Democrats and, you know, it'll be out of control, socialism in the United States, is playing to the kind of moderate Republican that is increasingly occupying Atlanta and the suburbs around it. These are the same people who voted against Trump in the election. They turned against him, turned off by his stupid rhetoric, and there's that word again, sorry, turned off by his inflammatory rhetoric and his you know, childlike juvenile tactics. So is it really good for them to be aligning with Trump? Will that work? I don't know. One thing I was that I was right about is that interest is way high in this election. It looks like voter turnout will be very, very high.
Yeah, you give people a contest. You give people a choice, and all of a sudden, people start to turn out, you know, when it's predetermined. I think Warnock has the better chance. I've been saying that from the very beginning. But the other guy is just sort of the same old Republican suit. So that's a tougher one for me.
JAP.
I may be wrong, but I think the Democrats can pull it off. I think that that the Trump voter, there are going to be a lot of Trump voters sitting on their hands, and I think that Trump, not so secretly, wouldn't be disappointed if the Democrats won this race. I think that he wants it to, the message to be, if Trump's not on the ticket, the Republicans are going to lose. And so I think that the Democrats could pull it out.
And Mike Spain.
Well, it comes down, as all runoffs do, it comes down to who can get the vote out. And I agree with you, JP. I think the moderate Republicans are not going to be enthusiastic about Kelly Loeffler or David Perdue. They really are abysmal candidates, or abysmal senators. I mean, Perdue didn't even support the last stimulus check. And this kind of thing is going to come back to haunt them. But I think it'll haunt them by disinterest. I don't know that it's going to get the suburban Republicans around Atlanta to go out and vote for Ossoff and Warnock, but they just might not vote at all. And that kind of a small percentage change could just be enough to get one or both of those Democrats in. I mean, Ossoff, you know, he's 33 years old. He's a remarkable, bright, brilliant up-and-comer. And he's running against, you know, Perdue, who's, you know, represents a whole different thing, you know, old guard. And maybe it's enough to motivate Democrats to go out and vote for him and to go out and vote, of course, for Warnock, which, you know, he's a revered minister who sits in at the head of the same church that Martin Luther King ran, the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. So, I mean, he will get the vote out, too. It could surprise us all. It's only a week from today. Well, the election's a week from today.
Week from today.
We'll know the results. Yeah, I don't know when we'll know the results.
No, whether we'll know the results and then when the votes will be accepted by the actual candidates. That's the other issue, right? So.
Right. Yeah, you know that how that plays out. Right?
Yes, especially in Georgia. Ossoff is interesting because he called Perdue out in a debate in the first go around in the fall and said, and called him to his face, you are a crook. And Perdue then never debated him again. And I just don't know, does that work or not?
Yeah, well, who watched the single speech that, you know, Ossoff made the night that Perdue didn't show up at the debate? You know, I mean, you know, you need a debate to get people's attention. And Perdue Absolutely. Is hiding from him, basically, and just screaming about Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and trying to scare people, making them the boogeyman and making Ossoff part of it. And, you know, it may motivate some people to get out.
and vote against Ossoff and vote for Mike, Purdue.
Hey, Mike, you remember when Mario was somebody, who was it? So who was running against Mario, and Mario got mad at him, and he said, you said damn on the radio. So I'm not.
Oh, man. Our conventions have changed quite a bit.
Was that Andy O'Rourke?
No, yes, it was Andy O'Rourke. Thank you, Joe. It was Andy O'Rourke, and he said, he called up a call-in show with Mario was on and said, this is Andy O'Rourke. Why won't you debate me? I won't debate you because you said a curse word on the radio. On the radio. I thought that was great.
Wow.
In other words, any excuse will do.
Right. An incumbent to debate a up-and-coming challenger can only hurt the incumbent.
Well, and that first debate was a bloodbath. I mean, it wasn't pleasant to watch, and I can see where he would never want to do one again. Okay, where are we? We have about 10 minutes before we go over. We have one letter here. Your panel demonstrates one of the core weaknesses of the Democratic Party today. You ready for this?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right. And that is to dilute and destroy a popular and necessary measure, in this case, stimulus checks to every American citizen. Through the insane process of means testing, already the Democrats have agreed to a phase out at $75,000 per year of income based, by the way, on 2019 tax returns. Every other first world country has given their citizens money during this horrific pandemic. If you are so concerned about someone who is undeserving getting this money, it can be easily clawed back through taxes. This is our own tax money being returned to us, by the way, unlike the insane tax breaks for the rich that have created the current deficit. In terms of giving the states the money, New York State has an example impoverishes New York State as an example impoverishes its own school districts, refusing to give them the money required by a law. What makes you think the funds would reach the people that need it without making them jump through a horrible series of hoops?
Well, there you go. You can either pay it back to the IRS when your taxes are due, or you can donate it to charity and get a write-off. That's what the people who have that dilemma should consider.
Also, by the premise, by the gag, as Johnny Carson used to say, I don't know that the people on this panel think that it's a bad thing. The $600 is a bad thing. I certainly don't. I think it could have been much better in a country of this wealth.
Rosemary?
Well, I mean, comparisons with other countries isn't right either, because those were only checks. That's all they did. All the other stimulus prompts in the bills that have been passed, well, only one that has been passed here and discussed here, help to business, help to states. That's unique to the United States. So we actually have given more to people than in other countries. So that's not the comparison. I don't know. There's a point to it. I do like the idea of giving more money and then claw it back with taxes rather than rely on people to do the good thing and donate money or to just pay off debt like I'm going to do. That's not going to benefit America. I'm benefiting myself, and I'm afraid most people left to their own devices will do that. I like to see government take action, and I think this bill is insufficient in the action required.
JP?
Last week, Chuck Schumer was kind of chest thumping about $54 billion of this relief bill going to New York. He was saying that he needed more, but he was talking about what a good bill it is. And now it's not enough. And we'll see if we end up getting 2,000. But it's people's differing views on this are changing, and including Schumer and Trump.
Wait a minute, though. Having bashed Schumer and waiting to vote against him, I do have to defend him here. He was appraising the bill when it looked like that was going to be the deal. That was the compromise. It was 600 was the most they could get under a compromise with the Republicans to get it passed. Then the head Republican comes out and says, oh, no, I think it should be 2,000. Schumer would have been crazy not to say, yeah, 600 isn't enough. That's not a change in his attitude. It was a change in the possibility of what he could get passed.
Alan?
Right.
All right.
Right you are, Rosemary.
David.
I like this, Alan. Wow.
David says, $2,000 cash bribe. Trump is trying to buy his way to, quote, keep complaints about his performance as commander-in-chief from becoming more than a nuisance. All right.
Well, don't you think that if it does pass, he'll take full credit for it, even though the Democrats proposed it back in June?
Yes.
I think we can assume that. Yes. All right. Let's go to another topic here on our something we can touch on this morning, and that is the increase in air travel. Of course, as this pandemic continues to rage, air travel is highest since March, despite all the warnings. We have seen more people going to airports and more people in airplanes. This, while more people than ever have been telling you, for God's sake, stay home. For God's sakes, don't go on a plane. For God's sakes, don't travel. Spain's health ministry said it registered 50,122 dead since the start of the pandemic, and a proposed law in New York would ban landlords from evicting most tenants. But the big story yesterday were more people were screened at U.S. airports on Sunday than on any other day since mid-March. Sunday was the busiest day for U.S. airports this year, underscoring concerns that a spike in holiday travel may contribute to the spread of the coronavirus, even as new cases remain alarmingly high and officials plead with Americans to avoid taking unnecessary risks. The Transportation Security Administration screened nearly 1.3 million people on Sunday, the most since March 15th, when airline passenger numbers were in free fall as the pandemic began to take hold within the U.S. Since then, I just lost my place. Since then, the number of travelers screened at airports has exceeded 1 million fewer than a dozen times, including around Thanksgiving and Christmas. About 3.8 million people passed through TSA travel checkpoints between the 23rd and 26th of December, compared with 9.5 million on those days last year. The surge in holiday traffic compared with previous months comes despite warnings from federal officials and soaring U.S. numbers. Dr. Fauci was on television this morning saying that he is concerned about a surge, and January being the deadliest month on record as a result of the coronavirus pandemic.
I wish I remember the name, Joe, of the that very dangerous plane which had crashes and is now
737 MAX.
Yeah, MAX. That's that MAX. MAX is being put back into service now. And that's the big story of the morning. So not only do you have more people flying, but you're going to have more people flying on risky planes. And God forbid one of those planes should go down after all of this so-called work to reform them and to rehabilitate them.
Yes. We hope they were formerly risky planes, right?
Yeah, that's the hope. Yeah.
Right.
I'm not saying giving everybody a bailout is the right way to go, but I mean, the airline industry, the airline travel industry is really, really compromised right now. And the question is there a safe way for people to fly during a pandemic? The experts, I think, are saying no, and people are saying, maybe.
No, what they're saying is not me, everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, they do interviews of people at airports, and they say, well, I think it's going to be okay. You know, they'll say through their masks. And a lot of people travel, and they don't get sick, so maybe I'll be one of them.
And my parents haven't seen their grandchildren for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, it's painful for people. It really is. But don't you? Yeah, go ahead.
I have a panic attack.
I wonder if it's the actual travel that's causing the spread, or it's more that you travel and then you get to where you're visiting your grandchildren or your grandparents or your niece and nephew, and that at the home is what's causing the spread after the travel. I wonder whether the actual airplane is safe or not. And it's hard to answer that question, I would imagine.
Because, or the airport.
They go hand in hand, yeah. Or the airport,
or,
yeah.
Or the airport.
But you're bringing it with you, right? I mean, if you have it, and then you're bringing it across from, you know, gate 7 in Albany to gate 32 in Denver. I mean, I would think it would be both, right?
We miss our grandchildren terribly. We miss our grandchildren terribly at the Chartock House, I can tell you that right now. But we fully understand, and they fully understand, our children, they're the parents of our grandchildren, understand that this is just too risky. We shouldn't do it.
Right.
Just like not wearing a mask or all of these other things. And yet, people do it.
I don't know. I don't want to say this is admiration, but I get a panic attack going into the grocery store for more than 5 minutes when there's three people in the aisle. I cannot imagine going on an airplane. This is separate from whether I'm saying it's right or not. It's just I can't imagine even doing it with all that we've been told and all that we know of that being something where you would say, oh, I'm going to go. And because to me, at least I thought this was the case, the travel was supposed to, at least, unless it was for work or for, you know, tragic family circumstances, was supposed to be fun. And I wouldn't find any fun in that whatsoever.
I agree with you completely. It would be terrifying for me to go through. You know, it's not the plane so much that scares me. I mean, that is frightening, too, if you get a guy next to you who's coughing or something. But it's getting through these crowded airports in the holiday season. The public health experts have predicted everything that's happened. And they keep saying it's going to happen if you do this, and people do it, and it happens. And then they say it's going to happen if you do this, and they do it, and it happens. When are people going to start listening?
Good question.
I don't know the answer.
I am being silent because I can't think of anything that I could say without inspiring another letter about calling people stupid.
Which is a great technique, Rosemary, because in fact you are calling them stupid without calling them stupid.
Which, by the way, I don't feel any different than getting in a car and traveling across the country. It all seems bad to me. I don't know.
Scary. It's just scary.
But there is nothing literally nothing I enjoy more than traveling, and that includes eating. And yet I have not done it. I have done the car, but I have not been on a plane since March, and I won't. I'm not going to until these vaccines actually show that they're making a difference. It's just too big of a risk. What would inspire you to go? I guess if you had to take care of a sick relative, you know, but even a funeral, even that's not worth it right now. It is horrible. And Mike, you were the rightest one here when you said it's hurtful. People don't like this and it's awful. But the alternative is a possible extreme illness or death. And that seems a pretty good incentive to stay off the plane. By the way, I also don't want any more money going to the airline industry. It's one of the big giant companies that got help that didn't need it.
I do want to see them come out of this. I do want to see them come out of this because when the vaccines all do kick in, I, just like you, I can't wait to travel again. But I can't get on a plane right now.
I gotta hold you there. We gotta take a break. When we come back, we'll return and have more right after this. Good morning, last call on the roundtable panel for this morning, the 29th of December. A wonderful panel assembled. Alan Chartock, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller.
And a big thank you, Joe, for playing Tony Rice this morning. I mean, there is a guy who really could play that thing and who really had a great voice. And I think, even though many insiders knew who he wasn't given the appropriate kudos that he deserved.
Yeah, and very, very sad of his passing. And again, we have the playlist online at wamc.org/roundtable. But great to hear that music and that voice this morning. So we have some letters, and then we'll go on to probably what will be our final topic of the morning. So we go to David, who says, I believe the momentum for Democrats is there in Georgia from the general election. That and the general confusion among the Republicans may work well for the Democrats. And yes, they have two good candidates.
I want to talk about that for a moment, if we can. We know that the people of Georgia were fed up with Trump, but not with everybody else, not with other Republicans. So that's the question. Do you go with the, as somebody suggested earlier today, do you go with the fact that Trump lost and people were disgusted with him? Or do you say, okay, now I'm going back to my Georgian Republican values, as Lyndon Johnson once said, when he said, "We shall overcome," in a great speech, "I've lost the South forever." The question is, how much has Georgia changed? And to what degree will the people who voted for Trump voted against Trump now vote for the Democrats? Yeah, Rosemary, I know you did that on purpose. I know you did that on purpose.
The cuckoo? No, I didn't. I'm going to bring it with me in the studio if we ever get to go record in the studio again.
Oh, please do. We would miss it otherwise.
Become part of the background. I know.
So we're. I didn't
think anything that you said was cuckoo, Alan. I think you summarized exactly all the different kind of issues that are at play in this very complex race and why it's kind of crazy to call it one way or the other right now. It's hard to say how this will all play out.
And we all know about the polls. The polls are showing, you know, 1 point, 2 points for the Democrats one day and 1 point for the Republicans the other day. But there's Shartok's law, which is if you're not leading by 10 points and you're a Democrat, forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who trusts polls anymore?
There's especially close polls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all over the place, just like they were before. And we don't know. And obviously state polls are more difficult than national polls, which I don't always understand. But JP, what do you think?
Yeah, and those polls, you know, they say, how likely are you to vote? And you say, very likely. And they never ask the next question, which is, well, what day is election day?
Or did you vote the last time?
Right.
So, all right, let me go back to the other letters that we have here. What happens if neither candidate gets 50% again? Is there a do-over?
Well, there's no other candidates on the ballot, isn't that right?
Correct.
So, theoretically, there is no third, unless people write in, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't seem likely. One has to get more than 50%.
Oh, we have to.
Unless it's a tie.
End our pain and suffering.
Great question. Great letter.
Stump the band. Ruth says, my husband and I are among those recipients of the last stimulus payment who are not in need. Rather than simply banking the partial payment we receive, we send it along with a substantial addition amount to the Western Massachusetts Food Bank. I hope many others who are doing well will join us in that choice.
What a good letter. Excellent. What a good letter.
Great letter.
When you see people lined up for, you know, ancillary food, for extra food, meaning that, you know, people don't want to do that, but the lines are quite substantial, you know how important that letter is.
Let's go to Jill, who says, my neighbor is a health and safety manager at Pfizer with a six-figure salary. Her son, a former Marine, and his wife flew from California, where COVID is raging, to his parents' home here for the holidays. How's that for health and safety and patriotism?
Maybe he's got the vaccine.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
oh,
hard.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mike.
They brought vaccine to mom. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
No, but that's a great point about the people who are jumping the line, and we know that that's happening. Cuomo is calling for a criminal investigation of one group, which is allegedly not obeying the law. You know, this is something I think we're going to see more of until the vaccine really gets out there in a fair and equitable way.
Can I just
point out that it's a little icky to be ratting out your neighbors on a public radio program? I mean, we don't know the individual circumstances here. Maybe these guys legitimately all have vaccines. Maybe there was one of these family tragedies that we were talking about. Somebody's dying. We just don't know. So
yeah.
I'm not going to make judgment here.
I agree with you, Rosemary. It is.
Well, I don't. And I'm...
Well,
I'm delighted that the governor.
I'm concerned that there was a little too much information in that letter for that person not to be outed, to tell you the truth.
At least you didn't say where it was from.
Yeah, right. Or what part of the country.
I love the idea that the governor has called for a criminal investigation. That's all you could do. You don't have the facts, Rosemary, you don't have the facts, and we don't.
That's
so
right.
He calls for an investigation.
Right.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say today there was a story that Marco Rubio has gone on this rant against Tony Fauci, saying he's a liar. He lied about masks. He lied about immunity levels.
God.
And he went on and on. And then so people started reacting by posting photos of Marco Rubio getting his vaccine.
Yeah.
Talk about privilege. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm always.
I don't feel icky about that at all. We can make fun of Marco Rubio. Let us talk about Joe Biden for a minute. And he plans to hit the Trump administration today for falling short on the pace of vaccinating Americans against COVID. That, according to a transition official who was previewing the remarks. As Biden has done since the beginning of this crisis, he will be truthful and straightforward with the American people about what lies ahead and will address the current administration falling short on its pace for vaccinations. The Trump administration's vaccine distribution efforts are off to a slower start than officials had projected after a number of unanticipated snags, highlighting the logistical complexity of this Herculean effort. So there's two points there. One is slower than anticipated, and yet nobody thought this was going to be easy. You're going from 0 to 60 in about a week trying to get all of these people, all these ducks in a row, and that can be hard. Not to make excuses, however, it is complex.
It sure is. Do you think maybe they boasted and overestimated deliberately what their goal, had a goal that was unreachable just to make people happy?
Since 2015, yes.
Right. You mean there was exaggerations and promises that couldn't be kept? I'm shocked.
So if you're Joe Biden and you say, what is that? How do you, because you're the one who has to come in and fix it, right, Alan?
That's right. And we've been talking about this right along. Biden's first approach was to say, I want to reconcile the American people. I want to pull everybody together. We had 73 million people who voted for, for Trump. I want to bring those people into the great place here that we're all in together. And now he's realizing that the more he allows Trump to mouth off and to disparage what he is doing and to ruin the chances of the United States by not letting him know, for example, what kind of security is going on, what's going on in our embassies, what we know, he's right to be angry, but even his anger is moderated, I think.
Well, the cynic would say that Biden is kind of lowering expectations as he takes over trying to give people a reality check so that they don't expect it to flip overnight and he doesn't get blamed for the slow rollout.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Dale says, please use the Nashville bomber story to remind people that depression is real and help is out there. You will never be able to figure out the why. Only the bomber knows why exactly he did what he did. As someone who has suffered with depression, even to the point of having suicidal thoughts, I know how dark the feeling can be. You can't make sense of it, but you can push the narrative that help is out there. Good point.
They just did.
Yes, indeed. Kyle said, Rosemary, here's what inspired me to travel. The fact that I am around zero people back home, a teacher working remotely from home. In the lift, airport, and plane, I wore an N95 mask the whole time with a buff over it. What is a buff? Anybody know?
It's like a kerchief.
Okay.
Good. Oh, is it?
Oh. I don't know. Okay. Biff was a buff. Not taking it off once to eat or drink, using hand sanitizer frequently. What also inspired me was knowing that my family that I am visiting wears masks whenever in public and also does not meet with groups of people outside their home. It is safe to travel when you have been and follow precautions.
Okay, so here's my thing. if you live alone, as this person obviously does, and you don't go out, what are your chances of getting the virus? Minus zero, right? Or whatever, very close to that. You know, you may touch something there. But on the other hand, if you go out, if you get on a plane, you are automatically raising your chances. End of discussion. Sorry.
Right.
Well, and we certainly have... Go ahead.
There's still too many stories like that of the mayor of Troy,
yes,
who was incredibly inordinately careful and suddenly has a bad case of COVID. He has no idea where it came from. I believe him. I think that's legitimate. And Alan is right. You just... they don't even know where the danger is in travel. Is it on the plane? Is it in the airport? Is it waiting in a TSA line, having those guys touch you? We just don't know. And so there has to be a stronger motivation than an intense desire to travel to get me on a plane right now.
And Rosemary, you've...
I hope you're okay.
And Rosemary, you've always been a fairly severe critic of the people who screen flyers.
Yes.
What about them?
Yes.
My goodness, they are in a bad shot.
There isn't enough Purell in the world.
No.
The biggest protection they've had lately is that so few people comparatively are traveling. That's been a protection for them. And a precious small one, I think.
And at the risk of, I don't want to seem like we're, overly judgmental to the letter writer, because I understand the point of the letter. But to say that we're following every precaution, well, one of the precautions given by the CDC and the state and pretty much any other health official is don't travel. You know,
exactly.
And if you travel, quarantine for 14 days there and quarantine 14 days back. So to say you're following precautions, yeah, you're following some of them, but not all of them.
But your earlier point is so on target, Joe. You don't like to go to the supermarket, nor do I. But I do, because you got to eat. So there's got to be some kind of means test, for want of a better word, for when you go out and why.
Yeah, it's not fun. Go ahead.
Everything is a risk. That's all.
That's right. You know, everything is a risk.
It's all about percentages.
We are out of time, and I can't tell you, it's been a delight. We have a great group this morning, and it's always a pleasure to speak to you all. Mike, Rosemary, JP, thank you. Alan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everybody,
I'll
remember WAMC.
Yeah, WAMC.org if you want to help us out for year-end giving. It's always important. It's especially important this year. WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and you can help there. Alan, thanks again, and we'll talk soon. WAMC.org, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.